Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. From pottery workshops in Greece to hot springs in Japan, what makes travel truly unforgettable? Hello and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Gabe, and you are here just in time for the second part of our lesson called Travel for the Soul. Yesterday, we got into learning a little bit about what someone would like to do if they were to visit Egypt, as well as maybe planning a trip to Greece. Joining me here in the studio is Rhonda. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello, Gabe. It's good to be here with you. Let's go traveling, shall we?
Let's
do it. At least in our imaginations.
Yeah, we can travel vicariously, right?
That's a
very big word, vicarious. That means living through somebody else's experience, especially if you can't do it yourself. And you know, that's kind of what we do when we read about other people's experiences. In some ways, it does satisfy, even if we can't do something ourselves. That's vicarious living. Rhonda, you know, we did talk about Egypt yesterday, Greece. Have you been to either of those places?
I have not been to Egypt. I have been to the Greek islands.
Oh, you have? So,
yes, but not to this wonderful low-key place called Paros. And I would have liked that because I like meeting the local people. I like to see how people really live.
I did share yesterday that I went with my sister. And one of the things we did, we went into one of these local taverns, a bar there. And it was at night, and we happened to be there on an evening where some of the locals were celebrating some old dude's birthday.
Some old dude's birthday.
Yeah. I mean.
So, and you just were part of it. Did you sing happy birthday in Greek?
Well, I don't remember if we sang happy birthday. I remember them singing something. It was obvious it was this person's birthday. And I think we tried to join in. You know, my sister and I were over on the side a little bit. We didn't want to, you know, intrude, I guess. But it was just fun because they were using a local instrument and singing some local songs, too, that, you know, obviously you can't hear elsewhere. Yeah, so it was just a really fun experience.
Well, you know, in America, culturally, I don't know if it would be welcome for someone to crash the party like you did. I wanted a chance to use that fun phrase. It sounds like you crashed the party, and I bet the people loved it. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they had reserved the place just for themselves, and so they didn't care that other people were in the tavern. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it did feel a little bit like we were crashing the party, you know.
Good for you.
But yeah, something else about Paros is that it feels like that was the place where Greek people liked to travel.
Nice.
So the other islands mentioned, like Santorini, Mykonos, that's very popular international for international tourists to go to party. And there's other islands like that. But it felt like we were kind of joining the Greeks in where they would travel for their vacations in Paros. So, yeah, I would go back again. Maybe I'd check out another Greek island. There's so many out there to do. But we're going to get into the next part of what she would do, what this writer, Lebowit Lily Girma, would do if she were to visit Greece. But before we get into that, a lot of times when you go traveling, you buy souvenirs, right, Rhonda? Mm. What kind of souvenir do you value more? Like a handmade item, a photo, a memory, like food of some kind?
I think maybe something made by an artist or a piece of jewelry that's handmade. I don't want something big because I don't have a big place to put it. But
yeah,
something,
you want
something small that is made by someone so that the buying of it is part of the memory. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense. Almost so that you can share with somebody about, you know, what was going on when you bought it.
Right, right.
And share about that experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a combination of the handmade thing and the memory.
Right, right. And encouraging that local person. Actually, one of my favorite memories when I went to Greece was in Mykonos. Really was the key thing that happened to me there as I walked into an art gallery. Mm-hmm. Just kind of wandered in. It wasn't like it was like main tourist attraction, big sign. Just wandered into this small gallery and ended up having a wonderful conversation with a woman who worked there because they had a special display on women's art, depicting women. Mm-hmm. And it was a very meaningful display. So it was a combination of local culture, but really going that step deeper into how artists were expressing themselves in that culture. So I enjoyed that. I kind of got my own private experience in this small gallery with a meaningful conversation with the owner.
It's always fun to have those kind of experiences. And if you can get a souvenir in the process, that is great. Well, let's get right into our lesson, friends. We're continuing with our article, Travel for the Soul.
But to be honest, I'd also be up for a long weekend trip to Athens with a stay on the nearby Athens Riviera. Combine that with new hotels on the coast just a half hour's drive away, and you can easily plan a city and beach trip in one fell swoop, before the peak season crowds descend on the city. The cultural activity I'd most want to try, a pottery-making workshop with Volto, a design and art space in Antiparos Village, where guests can learn about the history of pottery and master basic techniques. Before the workshop is over, you get to paint and finish a piece to take home as a very personal souvenir.
Okay, so in yesterday's lesson, of course, we found out that the writer wanted to go to this Greek island of Paros. And then we read these interesting words, but to be honest, I'd also be up for a long weekend trip to Athens. Why does she feel like she needs to be honest about that? Sometimes we say to be honest, we're introducing some information that might be uncomfortable or might be surprising to some people.
Yes, what she's doing here is making a contrast. She just told us at the end of yesterday's reading that she likes that the quiet experience of a lesser-known island and mm-hmm. a local experience. And now she's going to make a contrast saying, even though I made you think I just like quiet things,
yes,
to be honest, I also, so you've noticed those go together, I also would be excited about, be up for, that's a fun expression, I'd be up for. It's an informal way to say, I'd be excited, I'd be willing for a long weekend trip to Athens. Athens, I have been there. It is a big city. And the parts you take when you're going from the airport to the hotel are not necessarily beautiful sightseeing. So you get a sense of a not quiet, very busy place. So I can picture this going from describing that quiet, low-key island. And mm-hmm. then she says, but I'd also be up for bustling Athens.
Yeah, Athens is quite a place.
You've been there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Actually, it was because we weren't sure which Greek island to go to, and the hotel we were staying at in Athens, the lady at the counter was like, oh, you should check out Paros. Mm-hmm. So that's why we went to Paros.
Well, Athens is so famous mm-hmm. historically.
Historically.
I mean, it's the great place. She doesn't talk about that, though there's plenty of things about Athens to be learned, but it's a place, always been a place of the movers and shakers.
It's one of those places, famous places around the world where the city is really on a hill, right? You got the Acropolis on top of that hill in Athens.
That's right.
And you could see it from everywhere in Athens, you know. And every time you go now, there's scaffolding around these columns. So it's not just the ancient ruins, but they're also trying to maintain and make sure that, you know, nothing gets further ruined, right? But I like that you mentioned that, you know, phrase up for, to be up for. Sometimes we even say to be down for to mean the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. I'm down for. Here, my kids will say, Mom, are you down?
Yeah.
And do you want me to say, sure, I'm down, or yeah, I'm up? Do we use those the same?
Well, we use up for and down for in the same way.
Okay.
But we can't say I'm up. We just say I'm down. English is really strange.
Okay.
Right?
Are you down for lunch together, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm down.
But are you up for lunch together, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm up for lunch, but I wouldn't say I'm up. So
okay.
It's weird.
You're safe if you say down.
Yeah, you're safe if you say down, or if you want to say down for, up for, those mean the same thing. English is so strange, right?
English is hard. Great job, listeners. Thank you for listening.
Right.
I want to say that to our readers. Thank you for listening because this represents great commitment and putting yourself in a place to learn something very hard. We hope that our discussions are not just for your mind, but also for your soul, that you feel encouraged and connected to us here at Studio Classroom. So I wanted to thank our listeners.
Yes, thank you. Well, I hope you are down for continuing with our lesson here.
I'm down.
You're up for it. Good, good, good. All right. So combine that with new hotels on the coast, just a half hour's drive away, and you can easily plan a city and beach trip in one fell swoop. Well, if you're doing something in one fell swoop, you're doing a lot of things at the same time using very few actions, usually just one action. It kind of reminds me of that phrase, to kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. I have to say, this actually comes from Shakespeare.
One fell swoop.
That's something fun for our readers to just tuck away in the back of their brains from Shakespeare, but it's a picture of a hawk swooping down and snatching something. So yes, we use it in one fell swoop. I'm just going to, in one trip, in one outing, I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. So it's a fun, very, we could say, very colorful phrase.
Yeah. It's a great phrase to know. So we see before the peak season crowds descend on the city. Everyone knows what peak season is. That's when tourism is at its highest, right? And then that's kind of a fun phrase too, to descend on the city.
It goes with the one fell swoop, doesn't it? Again, mm-hmm. that coming down mm-hmm. So that is descend. We say that, oh no, the kids are going to descend upon us. Like this idea that we're going to get attacked,
right.
But in a fun way by a bunch of people.
Right, exactly. They're coming from above down into the city somehow. But we read on here, the cultural activity I'd most want to try is a pottery-making workshop with Volto, a design and art space in Antipatros Village, where guests can learn about the history of pottery and master basic techniques. Well, Rhonda, how are your pottery skills? Have you ever done pottery before?
I have not, but I would like to do this. How are yours, Gabe?
We had pottery class in middle school and
really?
High school. Yeah, that was just part of our art class.
What's the difference between pottery and
like ceramics?
Ceramics.
Well,
is it the wheel that goes around and you?
I mean, also the material that's involved.
Well, history of pottery, we're talking about ancient places in this article, so the history of pottery would be a big topic in this part of the world, finding pottery everywhere, some of it valuable, some of it not.
Yeah, so you can go and learn about the history of the pottery and also get some basic techniques down. That is, learn some of these basic techniques.
Did you just say down?
Get them down.
Oh, that's different. Different use of down.
A unique usage of that word down. That's right. I don't know if I would master basic techniques in one trip, but maybe this author is very optimistic. That's good. Before the workshop is over, you get to paint and finish a piece to take home as a very personal souvenir. Well, there's the souvenir that she is going to take home, something that she will have made herself. Friends, that's it for Greece. We've learned about what she wants to do in Egypt, what she would like to do in Greece. Now let's go to Japan.
Japan. In college, I took enough Japanese language classes to both write and speak with confidence, but I've never been to the country. October would be the ideal time to go. It offers a chance to catch Japan's spectacular seasonal foliage, which is just as cherished by locals as the cherry blossom bloom. On any first-timer's must-do list are activities like sampling sushi at Tokyo's fish markets and overnighting at a traditional Japanese inn. I do both of those, no doubt. But another draw is to hop on the Shinkansen bullet train to Kyushu for a stay in the popular hot springs resort towns of Beppu or Yufuin, where I'd also soak in onsens and try Fukuoka tonkatsu ramen. I'm salivating just thinking about it. The cultural activity I'd most want to try. A self-guided hiking trip of central Kyushu, starting from Beppu, that includes routes along scenic bays on Onyujima Island, and a night at a rural farm, all planned by established community tourism-focused tour operator Oku Japan.
All right, well, there's a shout out to a specific organization, Oku Japan. Maybe you want to get in touch with them yourself if you have a chance to travel to Japan. Well, let's go back to the beginning of this section. In college, I took enough Japanese language classes to both write and speak with confidence. That's good.
That's amazing. Remember, she said she's African-born, so this is a woman who really loves world cultures. That's amazing.
I wonder if language comes naturally to her. It comes naturally to some people more than others.
Yes, I wonder. And she's obviously someone who doesn't mind just having adventures and trying things out. So this article gives us a sense of her being an enthusiastic person. So we hope that you are enjoying learning English, dear listeners, and we want to be able to help you speak with more confidence. And as you may notice, I don't always speak in a fluent, easy way without making mistakes. Sometimes when I'm on the radio, I think, oh no, they're hearing me say things in an awkward way, or I get a little nervous. So I want to encourage our readers that we native speakers sometimes can feel that way too.
Well, for sure. I mean, it's just a natural way of speaking that we want to maintain here on the radio.
That's right.
Yeah.
Natural, and which doesn't mean perfect, right?
Yeah, nothing is perfect. You know, you can speak with confidence no matter what your level is. And this writer was able to take enough classes to speak with confidence, which, you know, again, I've heard Japanese is the grammar is not the easiest to master. And so this says a lot. So she says she's never been to the country, but October would be the ideal time to go. That means maybe the best time to go because it offers a chance to catch Japan's spectacular seasonal foliage. When I think of seasonal foliage, I think of the leaves changing colors and the different plants. Foliage refers to plants of different types. And with the seasonal foliage, did you ever spend time in a place where you could see the different seasons represented in the plants and the trees?
That's where I grew up. And in fact, October, I went to my home state of Illinois, and that's where the foliage, I think it means especially the leaves, turn colors. And I love how she uses the verb to catch. It's the idea, there's a short time, and I don't want to miss it. I have to catch that spectacular seasonal foliage, those colors changing.
Right. This is something interesting for me to read. It's just as cherished by locals as the cherry blossom bloom. Everybody knows about the cherry blossom bloom, the cherry blossom festival. You know, earlier in the year, you want to go and see those cherry blossoms. But according to our article here, the locals cherish, you know, what's going on in October just as much. Well, on any first-timer's must-do list are activities like sampling sushi at Tokyo's fish markets. That would be cool. I'm a fan of sushi. Are you a fan of sushi, Rhonda? Do you like sushi and sashimi?
I don't know what that is, but I like sushi. What did you just say?
Oh, so, you know, sashimi. I actually prefer sashimi. It's more just the raw fish pieces. Yeah, whereas sushi often comes with like the rice and other things like that.
Well, I'm down for sushi.
Yeah,
sushi's I don't know if great. I'm down for that, just raw fish.
But you have to have it with wasabi, right? Do you enjoy having it with sauce or no?
It's hot.
It is. It can be quite spicy.
What's that word way back from yesterday? Unquenchable thirst. I think wasabi would give me an unquenchable. There would be an unquenchable fire in my brain.
Yeah, that's kind of where you feel it.
No, you got me thinking about. We're going to get to some good words about food and the mouth in just a minute. But can I talk about that word, overnighting?
Yeah.
There is an example of, it means staying overnight. There's an example of what English can do. English is elastic, as you said to me once, Gabe, that it stretches. Overnight is a time, but they've turned it into a verb. She's turned it into a verb, and we do that a lot with English. Can you explain that phenomena to us, Gabe?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know if I can explain why words can can change like this, but it's a flexible language, and it evolves over time.
Could I make a verb out of your name? I could say, oh, we're just Gabing.
Yeah, well, I feel like I'm not sure what that would mean.
That's a joke we'd make in the office. If we were imitating you, it would be nice. We'd be like, yeah, we're just gabing over here.
Maybe
it's
if you were.
You might, Americans do that a lot. We just make funny words up right in the moment.
Yes, we do. Or like change the form of a verb or a word.
A word,
to something else. Like, from a noun to a verb or something. So, I mean, usually, if you're staying overnight, that's usually used like an adverb, right? But here, it's a verb. You can overnight at the traditional Japanese inn. We could maybe even say hotel or something like that. Often those are kind of the same thing. I do both of those, no doubt, she says. That means there's no question about that. She wants to do that. But another draw, that is another thing that attracts her, is hopping on that bullet train to Kyushu for a stay in the popular hot springs resort towns of Beppu or Yufuin, where she'd also soak in onsens and try Fukuoka ramen. And she's salivating just thinking about it. What does that mean, Rhonda? She's salivating.
Well, saliva is the liquid that your mouth naturally produces, so it means to produce more saliva because you see or smell food. So it's kind of a funny thing to say in this article.
And not only see or smell, but even thinking about it, it can make you salivate.
Yeah, and it's not, I feel like it's not something, it would be a little funny to say it to someone. You're talking about saliva in your mouth. So she's being kind of bold and humorous in this article. To say this as a writer, you wouldn't necessarily in normal conversation say, I'm salivating right now.
Do we
want our readers to say that?
Well, I mean, it depends on the relationship, I guess.
I picture a dog. Sorry. I don't mean this writer.
Oh,
this writer, I love this writer. But if we said that,
you picture a dog because, we often, because dogs are often salivating.
Here's a way to say it. It's a very graphic image.
Yes, of the saliva that's produced in your mouth.
So you just don't want to say that to your, I don't know, someone you just met. Oh, hi, let's have lunch. I'm salivating. just handle that one carefully.
Yeah, sure. That's a good point. That's a good point, Rhonda. All right. So, but now at least you know the word, friends. At least you know how to use it.
We have over-talked that one.
About salivating. That's okay. All right. So let's get to the cultural activity she wants to try in Japan. This is a self-guided hiking trip of central Kyushu. This sounds cool. Starting from Beppu, that includes routes along scenic bays on Omijuma Island and a night at a rural farm. How would you like to spend the night on a rural farm? I don't think I've ever spent the night on a rural farm.
I grew up on a rural farm.
You did?
Actually, to say rural farm is a little bit
redundant.
And by the way,
because most of the time farms are rural by definition.
Right. Yeah. By the way, good job pronouncing it. It's kind of hard to pronounce that word, even rural. I mean, I grew up the road in front of my farm, we called it Rural Route 2.
Wow.
And I still can't say it very well. Rural. But so good job pronouncing rural. Yeah, I lived on a farm. I had a rural address. And by the way, I just said route. I think you said route.
Different pronunciations.
R-O-U-T-E. And our readers said it one way as well. So that's a word in English. But it all implies out there, not in the city, routes along scenic bays and a night at a farm, a rural farm.
That's right.
Yeah. In fact, she didn't need to say both of those.
That's a very good
point. But maybe that
point
tells us something about our writer. Maybe she is not accustomed to
the rural life.
The rural life. And so she really wanted to put both those words out there.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. But yeah, you're right. Most farms are really out there in the countryside. That's a synonym for rural, right? Out in the countryside. And this is, in her mind, this is all planned by an established group there called Oku Japan. Well, that's not all, friends. We have one more section, so let's get into it.
Seychelles. I've had my eye on this stunning archipelago located 1,000 miles off the east coast of Africa, partly because it's evolving and quickly becoming a solid rival to the Maldives. Take Bernard Arnault's prestigious hotel brand, Cheval Blanc, which opened in Mahé in December 2024.
Well, friends, that's not all we're going to learn about Seychelles. In fact, the beginning of tomorrow's lesson is going to be all about it. However, here we have our little introduction to this place. She's had her eye on this stunning archipelago. What does that mean? You've had your eye on something, Rhonda?
It means for a long time, I've been considering it to I've had my eye on. Like, oh, I've been wanting to buy that dress. I've had my eye on that dress.
Yeah, that's a great example.
For a long time.
So she's been wanting to visit this archipelago. She's learned or heard a lot about it over the years, partly because it's evolving and quickly becoming a solid rival to the Maldives. Well, this is cool. Everyone's heard about the Maldives, but maybe not everybody's heard about the Seychelles. But we take Bernard Arnault's prestigious hotel brand Cheval Blanc, which opened on Mahé in December 2024. So just recently, just over a year ago, right, this place opened. Now, this is a kind of a famous brand of hotels in the Maldives, and now it's opened a place over in Seychelles. We see this word prestigious. This is the last word we're going to talk about today before we say goodbye. What does prestigious mean?
It means admired as one of the best and most important.
That's right. So this is one of these prestigious hotels that you can stay at in the Maldives, as well as now in Seychelles. We, of course, do have more to learn about what you can do and see in Seychelles next time. But for now, I'm Gabe.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.